There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along for another hour. Same phone number, same as it's ever been for a phone call or a text. 343-0106, 343-0106. And yeah, I was told that I would get along with this man beforehand. And we've had like 3 or 4 minutes before the mic went on. And I realized those people, okay, y'all are right. Joined today with Mobile County Sheriff's Department, Warden of the Mobile Jail, Pat Mitchell. Good to see you.
All right, good afternoon.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So this is, you know, I talk to people who come in here, law enforcement, about a history of law enforcement. And it's a thing that's been, I've watched from the outside. There's so much to be said for the wisdom of law enforcement, to have people that are in, because there's things that, I know there's things that they teach you in the academy, but there's probably a whole bunch of learning that goes on the job.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I get around you folks that have done that, and I'm like, oh my God, okay, it's wisdom.
Well, we call it institutional knowledge, and you're right, it's the wisdom. And fortunate for me, I have a great core of people that I work with. My staff and all the officers that are there at the Metro Jail, they're experienced individuals, and they're passionate about what they do. I couldn't do it without them. I mean, they're just a great core of people.
Well, you've been doing this, and we're going to go through this, your career and the different ways you've served in law enforcement to be where you are now. So it's 1990, and you signed...
You're telling my age. Yes,
well, we had to be in that conversation, so you're just a few years my senior. 1990, you decided to get into law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Talk about that decision. What precipitated that? Were you at, like a lot of us at 7 years old, saying, I want to be a police officer, or did you talk about that, Pat? Right.
So basically, I had gone off to college.
Okay.
And my original path that I thought I wanted to choose and majoring in was architecture.
Okay.
And so you go from architecture to criminal justice. So that's okay. A big...
Yeah, it's pretty... different parts of the college.
It really is. It really is. So anyway, I end up getting into... I know what it was. I took a couple of CJ courses.
Okay.
And really just got into it. I enjoyed it. And so I changed my major to criminal justice.
So it's not... You didn't go in thinking, I'm going to college for criminal justice. You didn't go... Do the, you know, the architecture thing always scared me because I stayed about a fifth grade level math, and I remember thinking it was cool, but they said, you're going to have math. I'm like, well, I'll do something else. So you made that switch then, and
absolutely,
you found this thing that spoke to you.
Exactly. Like I said, I took the classes, and I just really fell in love with the courses, and I said, well, you know what, I would change my major, and it was criminal justice, and I have my degree in criminal justice, and it was just a fit. It was the fit for me. And so going to school to Southern University in Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. And so there I wanted to become a police officer, obviously. And so I signed up for the Baton Rouge Police Department.
Okay.
I signed up for Mobile Police Department. And so, you know, the rest is history, obviously. So
you
back home. So.
Yeah, you got the Mobile. What I love, too, and we're going to go to the law enforcement, but the full circle. There you were, a student doing that, and you're now teaching kids.
That's correct, yes.
So you're on the other side and say, truly, I know what y'all are thinking because I was there at one point, too.
Absolutely.
So 1990, you get started in the police academy, and I was reading a list, too. One of our friends in common sent me. You've worked in, y'all get this, so patrol, okay, narcotics, special investigative services, you've been PIO, public information officer, and this comes up on the show still. You were one of the Jaguar unit.
Yes,
officers.
So back when I started, Harold Johnson, Chief mm-hmm. Harold Johnson, was the chief of police at Mobile. And he and public safety director at the time, Reuben Greenberg, mm-hmm. and they came up with the Ranger and the Jaguar special units. And so I was one of the original officers in the Jaguar unit.
But you know how that name brand still stays. We'll be in a discussion about whatever's happening today. Mm-hmm. And my text line will light up with people like, the Jaguar unit. I mean, and here we are in 2024, and they're still talking about the Jaguar unit.
That's right. Yeah.
It made that big of a difference.
It made a tremendous difference. It was a two-man unit, and we rode in the rough areas.
Yeah.
And we were a special response unit, and I think we made a tremendous impact during that time.
So, and special response unit, because I know that Sheriff Birch has used this term because how he's kind of organized deputies in the county, that meant that you didn't have a specific beat or whatever the term is. You would go to would they call you and say, hey, we need some help over here?
So basically how it worked, we pretty much had our pecking orders, if you will, before the shift started. We'll go to our roll call.
Okay.
And there would be some hot spots that we had to address, whether it was citizens' complaints or whatever the chief may have us to do, okay. or the captain over the unit may have us to do. And we'll address those special hot spots, and we'll address those areas. But along the way, if a normal call would come out, we're close by, we would go ahead and take that call uh-huh. en route, you know, as we're doing our normal routine patrol.
So, it did, from what you just told me, Warden, to the commentary I see, it obviously was effective because it still holds this, and people say, man, the Jaguar units were getting things done.
Yeah, you know, during that time, it was still the heyday of, crack cocaine was still, mm-hmm. Prevalent at that time. And we worked with narcotics. You know, obviously I worked in narcotics mm-hmm. as well. And so it was just one of those specialized units that addressed those issues during that time.
Which were a lot of them. Yeah. That at some point then, you go from the police department to the sheriff's department.
Correct.
And then that would have been, I guess, Jack Tillman was sheriff at that point?
Jack Tillman was the sheriff at the time.
So what was that transition like from, is it the, because I know there's a lot of people that were PD that went to the sheriff's department. Just give, like, for somebody who's not in the world, what's that transition like? Is it a big difference, a little difference?
It was a shocker for me, you know,
okay.
working in the city, you know, it was a shocker. You know, the county has a lot of rural areas, and mm-hmm. And it has evolved over the years. So we just don't work in the rural areas, work the county.
Yeah.
And so, that transition, it was an eye-opener for me. It was a great experience. I enjoyed that time working for the sheriff's office. And obviously, here I am. I'm back again.
So. Yes. Yeah, it does say something. We're going to come around to that. Yeah. You then, became, so this is interesting, too, you're an educator in the books now, but you were also educator in protocol and new recruits, because you then went back to police academy.
So I had an opportunity, a former MPD captain. He retired. And when he retired, he was hired on as director of Southwest Alabama Police Academy, which was commonly known as SWAPA. And so I had an opportunity to go work for him as the deputy director of the police academy during that time.
Now, you look at that, too. I wonder what it must be like for police academy or policing in general from our age group to the kids who are just coming in now. How much is technology a different? I mean, you're probably teaching technology with criminal justice alongside with the old good old fashioned policing, right?
Well, yes, because you can't substitute good old fashioned policing.
Right, you got to get out there.
You just cannot substitute that. The technology piece, I think, is needed. I think it's good, but you still got to have good old fashioned smash mouth policing.
Uh-huh.
You cannot substitute that.
Does it make it easier to do that? Is it an enhancement? Is it neutral? Using the technology, once you do that and you set that level you just set, Warden, does technology help, neutral, or hinder, you think?
I think it helps.
Okay.
I think it helps, but you still got to have that balance, and you got to know how to apply the technology. But again, you got to have, I guess, the common sense, the wits of the police piece, of the mm-hmm. good old-fashioned police
right.
policing component of it. They work hand in hand. And you, I think nowadays
right.
you can't do either one without the other. And so we didn't have all the technology that you have now. Obviously, we didn't have it back then. So you really had to depend on a lot of your wit back in those days.
Right. So listen, keep your wits up, but also use that technology. Yeah. I want to talk about something, too. I'd read about you. Talk about, obviously, going down a list here, there's never been a challenge that I know of that Warden hadn't decided he wants to do. So you go in for a revamping at Pritchard PD.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about this over time. I mean, we talk about it right now at the Sheriff's Department and what the Sheriff's Department had to overlay, help it. What year is that?
That would be, oh, God, 2000 and I want to say five, maybe, if I got my years right.
Okay.
It was during the time Lawrence Petit, Chief Petit, went out there. And so it was Chief Petit and several other individuals who actually from the Sheriff's Department went out there to help him, you know, revamp the police department, help the citizens of Pritchard. And it was a good experience. It was a good time. It was a lot of challenges back
then.
That's
what I was going to say. Well, at the point that you're called in to revamp, tells me something needs vamped, right? I mean, there's problems there.
Yeah. There were some challenges, you know, needs to say, there were some challenges. But at that time, Chief Petit had a good core of people and that were committed to helping him and, again, helping the citizens there. And I wouldn't have traded that experience for nothing in the world. So.
It's interesting, too, to see, and this, you know, as your role as part of the Sheriff's Department now, talking to the sheriff about it, he's like, and people forget this, but y'all are responsible for all of Mobile County.
Correct.
Now, there are municipalities on top of that, but a citizen is a citizen of Mobile County, even if they live in a municipality.
Correct.
That's so when, correct. When going back into Pritchard, like he's done a couple of times, he's like, yeah, because there are citizens that need help, and therefore the Sheriff's Department can do that.
You know, the sheriff took on this initiative about a year and a half or so ago, and I think I have to commend him for that. I know the citizens of Pritchard certainly appreciate that.
We've had the calls here,
I grew up in Pritchard.
Okay.
So, you know, being from that area, I just know how the there are some good people in Pritchard.
And they got a right to live peacefully.
Absolutely. And what Sheriff Birch is doing now in collaboration with the City of Pritchard and Pritchard Police Department, I think it speaks volume. Mm-hmm. And you can actually see a difference that it's making.
That's good. And I think those snowballs build.
Correct.
Right? If it's then people have more confidence in law enforcement, communicate with law enforcement, things get better.
Correct.
All right. Come back. More of this conversation. We'll get your text as well. He is obviously a storied career here in many decades in law enforcement. He is the warden of the Mobile Jail. Pat Mitchell, our guest right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
To 120 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. And great to meet this man. I was told that I would get along with this man. I see why. He has got a heck of a story to tell. One of us from here, giving back to the community here. He made that decision not to go to Baton Rouge Police Department. Thank goodness he came back home. Warden Pat Mitchell, our guest. Leaving that after doing that work, that revamping in Pritchard, then you go on. I don't know if I would say yes to this one or not, Warden. You became the Director of Transportation for Mobile County Public Schools, promoted the Executive Director, meaning all those buses and all those hollering kids. That's a brave. I mean, you've done a lot of things that are brave, but that right there might be the toughest.
I don't know if I was brave or not, but I appreciate that.
I'm thinking about all those possibilities. Because you see, you know, 3 o'clock this afternoon, we'll see all those buses and all those kids. I'm like, my gosh.
Over 800 or so.
You talk about a challenge there. So you went and did that.
Yeah.
And then you decided to come back to the Sheriff's Department.
Well, I had an opportunity, the sheriff and I spoke about this, and the retired warden and I talked about it as well, and I actually turned it down.
Okay.
And because, you know, I'm doing well.
Right.
I'm enjoying what I'm doing. And so, you know, the sheriff and I went to the police academy together.
See, I've been trying to get, and off air, I'm going to try to get the warden to tell me some stories about on Sheriff Birch from back in the academy days. But
well, I'll tell you off air.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get those.
We'll talk off air.
Okay, good. So you've known him since back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so he comes to you and says, the first time you said no.
The first time I said no. And I may have said it twice. And then he came back. And, you know, sometimes, when opportunities present itself to you, you know, you have to think about it. You have to pray on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did those things, obviously. And but, you know, growing up in law enforcement like I did, and it's like going back home.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would be really great to go get the band back together, if you will.
Yeah.
Working with the sheriff. And it's been fun since I've been back, and good. I'm very appreciative. I'm very grateful that he even given me the opportunity to come work with him again, and I'm fortunate. I'm blessed. Now it's a lot of work.
I was about to say.
Some days I think he's setting me up. So.
Yes, because you said no twice. You probably the third time said. Now how many inmates am I going to be responsible for? And you said we're talking over 1,000 at any given time, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So that's a big. Not only I can only imagine. Let's say you have a company of people, and you got 1,000 people. That's tough to deal with. Now you got 1,000, 1,300 that don't want to be there.
Right.
I mean, that's a challenge.
If you remember earlier when I said having a good team, and we have a great team with the correction officers. You know, before taking this role, I really didn't understand the concept in terms of what they were doing. I was teaching it, mm-hmm. but it's a different thing when you're actually there working. And coming from the street side to this, it was an eye-opener.
Okay, and how?
It just having to deal with the things that the officers deal with day in and day out. And they are basically locked in the same facility with the individuals every day, 24 mm-hmm. hours a day. And so how often have you heard people say, well, you know, everybody can't be a teacher. Mm-hmm. Everybody can't be a fireman. Everybody can't. Well, you know, guess what? Everybody can't be a correction officer.
Yeah,
it is a very, very honorable profession, and I have the utmost respect for those men and women that don that uniform every day, and they do an awesome job, because to deal with the type of criminal or crime element that they have to deal with every day, that speaks volume of who they are.
Yeah, I would think about it. If you came up, Warden, if you came up as when you were with MPD or the Sheriff's Department, you came up on a group of people, chances maybe none of them are involved in criminal activity, or one of them might be. Now they are, you know, suspects until after. But you're dealing with 1,300 people. They're probably chancing they're in trouble for something.
Right, right, right.
I mean, everybody.
Right.
And
that's why we have highly trained individuals on how to deal with, how to cope with it, and again.
That's the one part, because I think about like corrections officers, people running it, the physical being able to be mm-hmm. strong enough to do things, but that may be once in a while. Mm-hmm. Mentally, and I don't go all la la on my show mm-hmm. a lot, but I mean mentally dealing with that, it's got to be. I mean, I think about the daily stress of that.
And those are the things that we try to address the stress part of it, because there is stress. there's a lot of stress, but we try to make sure that we continue to do our training. We try to make sure that we have avenues for things to help them to decompress, if you will.
Okay.
So those type of things are in place, the training of it. And we make sure we do that on a regular basis. And if there are signs of a particular officer who may be overwhelmed, mm-hmm. we try to address that. We have programs designed to address those type issues.
And I guess, you know, the nice thing is everybody inside that jail who's working with the Sheriff's Department running the jail gets it.
Right.
Y'all get, you know, you don't have to say, well, here's why everybody understands what everybody right. else is dealing with.
Right.
In that, do you see anything, we talked about technology earlier, anything that makes corrections easier now or through technology, monitoring, automatic, you know, video? I don't know. I mean,
well,
are there?
Well, one of the things I'm fortunate enough to, you know, the sheriff, I can go to him in staff meeting or whatever means I may have, and I can express the needs that we may need in that jail. And he would do everything that is in his power to assist me in getting those things to help us facilitate making sure that we have safety and security of those inmates every day. So I have that support.
Okay.
You know, one of the challenges we may have, and we might not have the budget that we need. And so, mm-hmm. but the sheriff has a great relationship, and that's his job,
yes.
to work close with the county commission. And so he will work with them, and they for the most part, they've been accommodating. But it's never enough. You can never have enough money dealing with corrections, because mm-hmm. it evolves every day.
Right.
And so you have to be able to pivot in terms of adjusting to whatever that element that you're getting inside your facility.
Right, which is, if it was the same last year, it's not the same now.
Absolutely.
Okay, just a couple minutes left. Number one, you mentioned this job and the calling to this job. Mm-hmm. Somebody who wants to do this, what's their track? I mean, you've had a track of many decades doing this. Somebody who's listening to us now that how would they go about being in corrections?
Well, first of all, we're hiring.
Okay.
Well, we are hiring actually at this moment, and if anyone who's interested in becoming a correction officer, they can go to the Mobile County Personnel Board and apply. They can go online and apply, and that's the first step. And then if they are fortunate enough to make it through that process, they'll be called in for an interview, and we go from there. And then if they make it, we do on-the-job training, if you will, until they go off into the academy. We have our own academy within the jail.
Okay, so and is that it is a corrections officer academy, or they do police the normal?
It's within the jail. We call it, you know, JMS, jail management.
Okay.
In terms of they learn all the inner workings of the jail, the policies and procedures.
Okay. I have one question here. Did they have to be a police officer first? Before?
No, they do not. No.
Okay. So
we actually have individuals who were once police officers decided they want to be corrections officers, and it works both ways. But they do not have to already have been a police officer, no.
Okay. The warden answered your question there. And I just want to ask you this one at the end here. So you mentioned the real world, and you've had real world from policing through investigations, now as a warden. You're the best professor anybody could have for criminal justice. Since you're, I mean, it isn't theory with you.
No, it's application.
So the kids go, well, I think it's, and you can say, well, this morning at the jail, it was actually
right. And I do get a lot of those type questions.
Like, well, yeah. We could talk about, the textbook says this, and I can tell you also what happened this morning at the jail. Warden Mitchell, what a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for being here, and we're going to have to get you back on soon.
Yes, sir.
And, yeah, there's people asking about those jobs. So, once again, there are jobs open.
We are hiring. Yes, absolutely.
Good stuff. Warden Pat Mitchell, our guest, and we'll be right back. More Midday Mobile.
Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 136, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, glad to have you along on this Monday. Time to check in with my buddy, David McCrary. David McCrary, who is, I guess, David, are you on assignment right now out buying cars?
I stay on assignment, I think. That's where everybody wants me.
Yeah, so this is your assignment, yes, is to go get those vehicles, and you physically go find them for folks. And where are you? What far-flung location?
We're in South Florida, and we bought a couple of cash cars, believe it or not. Anytime somebody's looking for a cash car, they're hard to find. But with tax time, you know, we've been busy. Our inventory got a little low, but we've, you know, still got 60 on the ground. So we're going to try to buy 20, 25 down here today and tomorrow, and we'll have them back by this weekend.
Okay. And that means if you didn't, for some reason, get the right vehicle for them on this trip, next time you go, you could be carrying a thing to find, you know, a car, a truck, an SUV for somebody in particular.
Absolutely. And we'll find it for them Wednesday. I mean, I'll be back in the office Wednesday. We can still sit there and look at the TV and go through the Carfax and all the you know, CRs and everything, condition reports, go over everything. Be glad to.
All right. Then tell folks how to find you in person and online.
We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. You can give us a call at 251-375-0068 or go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com.
Hey, thanks, David.
Have a good day.
You too. There goes David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. All right, phone number and the text line, 343-0106. I mentioned that we'd be talking to this man earlier in the show, and I was referencing, I guess it was one of the Moon Pie Minutes last week. You know, we do Moon Pie Minutes the whole way through Ash Wednesday every day. One of them last week was talking about what was going on right now at the Mobile Carnival Museum. And many of us have been inside it. I'm sure a lot of you have passed it by on the road that haven't been inside it. You ought to go. We're going to talk about that. Or stood next to it toward Mardi Gras. The curator of the Mobile Carnival Museum, Cart Blackwell, is joining us to talk about what's going on at the museum and a whole lot more. Thanks for your time. Cart Blackwell, are you with me?
Yes, I'm with you. My apologies.
Hey, no problem. So, yes, curator of the Mobile Carnival Museum. How long have you been doing this? How long have you been in that position?
I've been with the Mobile Carnival Museum for just plus 7 years now.
Well, that's plenty of time to get into it. And obviously, y'all are doing, telling the story of Carnival and Mobile year-round, but kind of a fevered pitch right now, the actual Mardi Gras season. Yeah, so
especially this year, since the museum is celebrating its 20th anniversary.
That I did not realize that. I want to get so yeah. If somebody has not been in there, and I've been a couple times, and I know you'll like a good curator say, well, if you haven't been in here recently, you haven't seen what's new. But yeah, tell people like what they're going to see, you know, day in and day out. I know they're, and we'll talk about special exhibits, but what's the story you're telling beyond just saying, hey, we're telling the story of Mardi Gras Mobile? Okay, how are you telling that?
Well, the Mobile Carnival Museum is owned and operated by the Mobile Carnival Association, and the Mobile Carnival Association celebrates the whole of Carnival. The 14 galleries of the museum tell the story of Carnival, its origins in this country here in Mobile. It's spread to across the Southeast, and it looks at Carnival according to a number of themes. It means different things to different people, but we focus on Carnival as an art form, an economic engine, a good time, a family affair, that's most important, as well as sub-themes of couture, food, humor. So we explore it many ways to capture the interest of so many people because there's something in Carnival for everybody.
It is, and what's so neat, even on the humor side and the satire side, to look back at the, old floats and old themes out there and go, I may not have been living in that time, but I know what they're doing. They're bringing frivolity about this, that, or the other. And then I can look at 2024. The subjects may be different, but it's the same spirit runs through it. You know, it's just neat to connect back
so
to the past.
There's so much continuity. We liken it to you're doing the same hit Broadway show, the actors change. So there's predictability, but variety to it. And it mesmerizes people who have grown up in this culture and those who might be experiencing Mobile for the first time. We want them to experience Carnival, learn about Mobile through Carnival, and definitely bring them back.
Yeah, what I like to think about, too, is our deep history here, you know, the original history with Mardi Gras. Because, like, right now, with the Civic Center, not there. And in my lifetime, that's, you know, you go to the balls at the Civic Center. That's what you do. That's... But I start looking at the broad swath of Mardi Gras and Mobile, I realize, yeah, we get focused like it's always been this way. Well, it hasn't. There was a time before we had a Civic Center. There have been changes. This is just another one of those changes.
So true. Well, one thing we do show is that Carnival is the one common denominator throughout Mobile's long, rich history. It's that binder. It's with us in the best of times. It's been with us in the worst of times. And it makes life so much better. And it's a huge part of our economy. It's a part of just daily life. Even if you are not necessarily a Carnival enthusiast, you benefit from it. You see it. And let's say you're not a member of an organization. You can watch what is likable to a Broadway show on the streets that you know you might live, worship, and enjoy yourself. You can watch it for free.
Yes.
And there's so much to it, and for locals and visitors alike, because our galleries are attuned first and foremost to locals. We give a wonderful time for our visitors, but all of our galleries change out at least once a year to focus on the many aspects of our city's greatest living tradition.
Yeah, I want to talk about this 15th exhibit you've got going on now. And this came up, I got into discussions back during COVID, and when we didn't know what was going to happen with Mardi Gras and crowds and balls and all these questions out there. And I talked to a historian, a buddy of mine, John Sledge. He and I talked about it, a good bit. I talked about several different people. Wayne Dean and I talked about it. And, in those conversations, it wasn't long in that COVID conversations, they said, well, listen, there have been times if we have to change things that Mardi Gras has been changed. There's been some big things. And they started, both of them started talking about during wartime. So when I saw that the thematic series now, Carnival and War, Mardi Gras during the times of armed conflict came up, I said, wow, this is exactly what we're talking about. So what's the history of here? You've got war going on and you've got this thing, like you just said, this tradition, but it does seem like it might be tinged to celebrate that hard when there's a war going on.
Well, the gist of it is, Carnival has been responsive to each one of these conflicts. And in some places, condition the conflict. So we look at that subject of war and carnival, and we show how it is, the two have interacted from the Mexican-American War from the 1840s through the end of the Vietnam War in the 1970s. And each section has certain common denominators that provide some continuity. There's always visuals of the city. What was the city like at that time? There are accounts of not only carnival during that war, but also of Mobile at the time. And they could be from the Mobile Register in the 1840s through a huge National Geographic spread on Mobile in the 1960s. Most importantly for our visitors, this is the feedback we receive. They really enjoy the deep dives, if you will, and that's for a lack of a better description, where we focus on veterans of the conflict, be they on the home front, the war front, and we've focused on people who have had a relationship to carnival, either through the carnival associations or through our mystic societies. And we keep those all wound into, for each section of the show, those are the common denominators, and we show how each war has responded and Mardi Gras with it.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this, and you talk about the deep dives, and then maybe we can, with this interview time, we can't go as deep, but we can go shallow maybe into one of the deep dives. Like you talked about, I'd read, like you said, each segment of the show includes accounts and artifacts of carnival luminaries who participated in military campaigns. So are we going to link, like, this person was king of Mardi Gras, or this person was something, and then they served to this capacity in war? Or how's that laid out?
Exactly. We have got some very notable figures. Sometimes their involvement in the conflict preceded their involvement in Mardi Gras, or vice versa, or sometimes their involvement was before, during, and after. We showcase not only kings and queens of the Carnival Association in the Mobile area, Mardi Gras Association, or those unsung heroes that are the vital people that keep our mystic societies going. We focus on individuals throughout the decades. To give you an example of one individual, he was among those people who took part not only in the invasion at Normandy, but Sicily, North Africa. He was the father of a queen of carnival, a notable member of the oldest parading society in the country. And we provide through one man what he meant to carnival, what carnival meant for him, and how he was a vital part of the greatest generation. Another instance is a reluctant debutante from the 1890s who became one of the leading portraitists for the American and British elite, and how she started doing very much patriotic war effort during America's entry into World War One. So it varies with each conflict, and we look at people of all stripes of life, and we show how they benefited carnival.
Wow, I can't wait. And you mentioned different conflicts, but when you talked about the World War II, obviously, I mean, Ken Burns put part of, you know, one of the cities in his documentary was Mobile, because, you know, Brooklyn and the war effort here, obviously it was a nationwide thing. But even here at home, carnival in the time of, like, I remember hearing from my grandparents, rationing and all those things that were going on, you know, with the war effort. At the same time, people were going, yeah, but we have this thing that we like to do that's frivolous. You know, when it seems like being able to navigate that had to be tough. I guess, you know, I would have worried back then that carnival would never come back, or Mardi Gras, but obviously it was healthy enough to handle that.
It varies with the war, such as the Mexican-American War. Both parades and balls continued throughout the conflict. During the Civil War, balls continued throughout the war, but parading didn't resume until 1868. The Philippine War, parades and balls continued throughout. World War One and World War Two followed the same template. Europe could have been blown to bits, but the Americans continued celebrating until the conflict happened. Then parades and balls stopped. Vietnam and Korea, parades and balls continue, but you have a lot of patriotic observations, if only via the themes of parades and tableaus that kept the home front, the spirit and recognition of the sacrifice, people who were serving overseas, in mind. So it has varied with the conflict, but there's been recognition throughout, and there's so many wonderful stories that are told through this exhibit.
I can't wait. First of all, if y'all have never been to the Carnival Museum, you got to go. And if you, like me, have been, and you heard what Cart just said, I'm fascinated with this this story of it. So the exhibit is open now, and until when?
The exhibit closes in April of this calendar year, so there's plenty of time which to take it in.
Okay, so if you get that on your list, if somebody wants to get tickets ahead of time, or I know I've gotten them when I got there. How does that work?
One can purchase them from our website, but it's really not necessary. You never have to wait more than a couple of seconds to purchase tickets to the museum in person, and you're guided on when the guided tours are for a day. We offer them at 9:30 in the morning, 11 in the morning, and 1:30 in the afternoon. Plus, we have self-guided, if you have a smart or iPhone, throughout the day. Okay. And there's docents present to answer questions.
I just got this question on the text line, too. Are y'all open on days they're parading?
We are open on parading days. Our hours of operation are as follows. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday from 9 to 4. We are closed on Fat Tuesday. We are closed on all Tuesdays and on Ash Wednesday because we all know everything downtown needs a little bit of a bath on Ash Wednesday.
So that's good. The answer to their question got me thinking, too. Somebody could go down, do the tour, and then just stay downtown for the parade that evening.
That they could. We welcome that.
Cart, I appreciate your time. I appreciate what you're doing at the museum, and I cannot wait to see this latest exhibit.
We hope you come see us soon, and the Mobile Carnival Association loves celebrating Mardi Gras.
Good stuff. There he is. He is the curator of the Mobile Carnival Museum, Cart Blackwell. 15th exhibit, Mardi Gras during times of armed conflict. So pretty darn mobile to see, isn't it? All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile and the Boom Pie Minute coming up next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Back to 154 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. It's listening to Dr. Bill this morning. I'm not saying we're not going to get, because it always happens, we'll get another, some more cold before this is all said and done, but we are on a warm streak here. If you hadn't noticed all that green stuff popping up in your yard, that's grass. You're going to have to cut it for the next however many months. My buddy Blaine Price from Parrish Tractor and I both experienced the world of cutting a big lawn out there, and he's got some help for us as well, because right now, y'all zero-turn mowers, what kind of deals are you running right now?
Well, on all of our Kubota zero turns right now, Sean, we got that 0% financing through Kubota. We got a really good, healthy inventory right now on zero turns going into the spring, anywhere from a 42-inch zero turn up to a 72-inch diesel zero turn. So a little bit of everything in our gas and diesel models. We even have some stand-on mowers as well for the mainly the commercial landscapers like that the most. But we got a little bit of everything, so come by, see us in Robertsdale Parish Tractor, because every one of these mowers qualify for that zero interest financing through Kubota right now.
And you and I said it last week, and if you've been on a regular, push mower, if you've been on a regular steering wheel lawnmower and you've never run a zero turn, your life's fixing to be changed. Do you agree, Blaine?
It will, for sure, and you'll get a lot of life to your back on the weekends because it shortcuts down the time.
It does, yeah, and with those bigger decks, you can get so much more work done. Also, quickly before we wrap up, in the rental department, too, if people are looking for stuff to do weekend projects or even long projects, how's the stock looking in there?
Looking really good right now. We've got plenty of tractors, skid steers, mini excavators, dump trailers, man lifts, all the way down to handheld power tools. Come by, see us. We even have a couple of zero-turn lawnmowers in our rental fleet. So if that's something that you're looking at buying but not sure, come rent for a weekend and try it out before you buy it.
Good stuff. Tell people how to find you.
We're right in the middle of Robertsdale on Highway 59. Come by, see us Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, or give us a call at 251-947-4171.
Thank you, Blaine.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, there he goes. Blaine from over at Parrish Tractor in Robertsdale. All right, I got just a minute or two left here. Let's see. Read some text here. This one from my supermoms. I forgot to ask, how'd you like the Super Bowl national anthem? Your show's bumper music introduced me to Trombone Shorty. I thought it was a neat version. Yes, I think Trombone Shorty, like I said, he should have been the halftime show as well. But yeah, John Batiste, right? So New Orleans guy taking the mic on that. I thought it was good. That's why I don't, I guess, I guess they said, oh, well, we did the New Orleans thing at the beginning. I would have taken the halftime show. You're in New Orleans. I would have had all New Orleans artists. I did like it, though, yes. Let's see here. Tusker says, ride with an officer, and you'll see what they deal with daily. I have done that. You know, and there's programs there, too, to do that with the Mobile Police Department. I don't know other departments I can't speak for, but and plus they have Citizens Academy for the police, Mobile Police Department, if you want to kind of see what that is, what that's like on a daily basis out there. See other questions here. I'm trying to get these cleared. And this one said, I was a corrections officer for 4 years in Mississippi. The worst problem I had was the other guards. It was a wonderful job that taught me a lot and changed my life. So there you go. All right, Paul Feinbaum show on the way next. We'll do this all again tomorrow. Speaking of the Sheriff's Department, I think it is the second Tuesday of the month. I know it is, and that means Sheriff Paul Birch joins us at noon.